Continuing now with Japan, big numbers beginning to emerge now. The number of people homeless, the number of people missing, and the number of people dead from the most devastated areas in the northeast of Japan. And the coverage now, as reporters get to the most devastated areas, we're really seeing some of the most gripping stories coming out. And our partners, the BBC, have been helping us with that side of the story. But David Biello has been giving us heroic efforts on the other side of the story. The man with the answers, as we continue to see an unstable situation at the nuclear facility in Japan, here to answer all of your questions about what's been going on. And we've been getting all kinds of questions. David Biello joins us once again. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So the first question from one of our listeners that I want to give to you is about an issue that we alluded to a little bit yesterday, the kinds of radiation that we're seeing or can expect to see from the Fukushima plant. Here's a question from a listener in New England who actually states it pretty articulately.
My name is John James from Boston, Massachusetts, and I would like to have you make a clearer distinction between radiation exposure to X-rays, if you will, or gamma rays, ionizing radiation, and radiation contamination, where radioactive particles that might be vaporized in a steam explosion then are dispersed and carried by the wind and contaminate your body, or you breathe them in and embed in your body.
David Biello, can you make the distinction that our listener calls for there?
Sure, and he obviously knows a little bit about what he's talking about. So basically radiation, the ionizing radiation he's referring to, the gamma rays and X-rays that we're worried about, what physicists call that is gamma radiation, it has to have a source. And that source is the radioactive particles that he referenced. So that could be the cesium-137, it could be the uranium fuel itself, it could be any kind of unstable radioactive particle. Those particles, if they get kind of wafted up into the atmosphere, they're both emitting radiation and they're available to be breathed in, to be eaten, to kind of land on your skin. The good news is, as long as you're wearing clothing, you can wash those kind of radioactive particles off and kind of limit your exposure. The bad news is, if you do end up ingesting them, that is a very bad thing, and that's what you want to avoid at all costs.
And where would X-ray gamma radiation actually come from if that proves to be a problem here?
That's coming from these radioactive particles as they're breaking down. So basically, these elements are unstable, like the uranium itself, and they split, and that releases energy, and that energy is radiation. And those are that's the gamma radiation that's kind of raising levels all around. And the tricky thing about radiation is it's kind of, to anthropomorphize it, it's contagious. You can make something else radioactive by bathing it in radioactivity.
Interesting. David Biello, Associate Editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American. Not surprisingly, another smart suggestion from a listener in Boston. Listen.
My name's Doug from Boston, and I'm just curious about the applying of water to the reactors in Japan. Can't they use some kind of precision-guided package or something rather than trying to dump it from the helicopter? It just seems futile.
Steve from New Jersey. Wouldn't it be possible to drop block ice on those reactors in Japan, not blowing the wind the way the water does?
Two smarty pants there, New Jersey and Boston. Your reaction, David Biello?
Well, I got to agree on the helicopters. That does seem a little bit futile. The hope there is that the wind is weak enough that you can kind of drop a water bomb, a big tonnage of water, directly into these spent fuel pools. And those spent fuel pools are either dry or, at the very least, very low, depending on who you believe. And the key is to get water in there. The best method thus far has been actually water cannons that are used to put out burning jet engines. When airplanes go down and,
right,
and the jet fuel is burning, it's very hard to put out those fires. You need to get a lot of water there in a hurry. That kind of water cannon is proving the most effective in kind of arcing water into the area where we need it to be.
But it's a short-term solution because if the pools have leaks in them, until you repair the leaks, they're just going to drain again. And that's one of the problems alluded to there by our listener. Let's move to the issue of the challenge of measuring what's actually going on here. Listen to this question here.
Jose Tovar, Miami, Florida. My question is, how come they don't actually give an actual number of what the radiation being emitted is at the nuclear plants?
I've seen measurements in microcuries or curies. What is the scale of measurement here?
Well, the kind of universal scale of measurement is called a sievert. This is the metric system, so most Americans probably aren't familiar with that terminology. And Japan is putting out some information on the levels of radiation in that scale. So what we do know is that by some of the units, it's as high as 400 millisieverts. To put that in perspective, that would rapidly take you beyond the kind of maximum yearly limit that nuclear power plant workers are allowed to be exposed to. That would take you beyond that limit within about 8 hours.
Wow.
And but radiation decreases with distance from the source, from the radioactive particles or the radioactive area. So by the border of the plant, and a nuclear power plant is a pretty big area, it's down to 0.6 millisieverts. And that you could probably withstand. You would not reach that kind of maximum yearly allowance for about, I think it's 5 days, if my math is correct.
Wow. Well, of course, his math is correct. He's an associate editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American. Finally, we don't have time to actually play their questions, but we got two questions on something that actually was an issue at Three Mile Island. What about the food supply and, you know, the marine life, that sort of thing?
This is definitely more of an issue for Japan itself, obviously in the wake of Chernobyl, where there was a fire that wafted a lot of these radioactive particles up into the sky, and then they kind of fell out of the sky and into the were absorbed by plants and animals and ultimately ended up in the milk supply, among other places. This is going to, if there are fires or steam explosions, this is going
to... This is something to look for.
Yeah.
All right, David Biello, Associate Editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American. You had questions at 8778-MY-TAKE. He had the answers. Thanks, David.
Sure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.